I'm over here to promote awareness among both parents, people on the spectrum, professionals, anyone who's interested on what it's like for people on the autism spectrum, both as a child, as a student, as a person in the workplace, and as a person in a relationship. I've done a lot of research, and I've written a lot of books, and I've also lived my life on the spectrum, largely undiagnosed. So it's been sort of like for the last 3 years, it's been my calling. I've sort of exploded and written like a whole heap of books in a very short amount of time.
You're up to, and I'm thinking it's around four with another two on the way, is that right?
Yeah, six books as of, there's four that are very specifically on Asperger's, and the fourth one is coming out in April in the US, and March in the US and April in the UK, and God knows when here. And then I have two fiction books, which I'm putting out with my own company, and it features an Aspergian type protagonist, an Aspergian hero. It's a fantasy trilogy. And part one is out, and part two is about to become out. A lot of us on the spectrum really love fantasy if it's well written, if it's believable. But what's been missing in that genre is a hero that's an Aspie. So I've created this character. I created him before I even knew I was an Aspie.
How long ago was it that you were diagnosed with the condition?
Well, I diagnosed myself first, like most adults, and particularly adult females. I was in a relationship with someone who had been himself misdiagnosed his whole life as ADHD and other things that his mother knew didn't fit and he knew didn't fit. And with a very small amount of research, I discovered a word called Asperger's, and it suited him to a T. And I read a bunch of books, and I felt that there was sort of a handbook that needed to be written about being in a relationship with a man on the spectrum. So I wrote my first book, 22 Things a Woman Must Know. She loves a man with Asperger's. I wrote it in about 3 days. I had a lot to get off my chest, and it was instantly picked up and has become a bestseller and has been translated so far into Japanese, and French is on the way in a couple of other languages. And then whilst I was researching that, I started thinking about Asperger's on the job, because a lot of the people I was interviewing were very, very intelligent, but largely unemployed or underemployed. And it was during the course of all this that I began to suspect that I myself was on the spectrum, and found a dearth of information about females on the spectrum. Like, you'd read a book about Asperger's, and at the end of every chapter, there'd be that one paragraph. And in females, this trait presents this way. And every time I came across those little nuggets, they applied to me beautifully. So while I was researching Asperger's on the job, which then became published and has a foreword by Temple Grandin, and it's won a gold medal in America, I started thinking about Asperger's. And I started seeking a diagnosis, and I couldn't find one. And I would call psychologists, and they would say, well, we only diagnose children, and we only use the DSM, which is, you know, a very limited tool for diagnosing people, yeah? And they'd say, you know, and we particularly don't diagnose women, because, you know, women are not on the spectrum, what? So I contacted several people, and they wouldn't diagnose me, or they told me flat out, I don't think you're on the spectrum, and I will take all your money, and I will try to prove you don't have it. So I thought, well, I will interview diagnosed women only around the world, and I will compile a list of their experiences and their traits. And I did. And all of their experiences and traits matched mine perfectly. And I compiled the world's first list of female Asperger traits, which is now, happy to say, being used by clinicians, people who diagnose. All over the world, I get emails all the time saying, may I use your table of traits, please, to help me identify females on the spectrum. So I self-diagnosed and then had it sort of made official by just having the acceptance of my peers and colleagues and, you know, Tony Atwood and Temple Grandin, who I've spoken with both of them, and other people, Leanne Holiday-Willey, Dr. Shannon Nichols. No one argues, no one doubts. Mm. No one doubts that I am indeed on the spectrum based on my books.
Why do you think it was so difficult to get that step, and literally, I suppose, for yourself to have to make it, that to get women on the table of, okay, the condition is not just to one particular sex?
Well, first of all, Hans Asperger studied only males. So he studied Asperger's as it presented in males, and he wrote his perceptions down and his observations down, you know, about males. There were no females in that study. So people just assumed there weren't any. But it's not so much that it presents differently in females, but it's perceived differently. The same traits show up in us. They just are perceived slightly differently. And we also are better mimics. And although I don't like to split things along gender lines, we generally are a little more socially adept, even though we're on the spectrum. We give the appearance of being slightly more socially adept, even though we're extremely limited in our capacity for socializing.
Not hard to believe, though, because if you put women and men into a group that are or aren't on the spectrum, generally the women will quite quickly get together and chat, and the guys will all be a little bit standoffish. So you can kind of understand, with particularly the social perceptions, that the women would be able to either cover or adapt it
quite
quicker.
One of the things about autism is that being around other people stimulates the amygdala in our brain, which triggers adrenaline, which makes us hyper. When you trigger adrenaline, you either have fight, flight, or freeze. And so what happens with little boys is a lot of times they become sort of unruly. A lot of times they get misdiagnosed as ADHD, or they become, you know, very focused on things. A little girl on the spectrum might be very chatty. She might be very gregarious because that adrenaline kicks in and it makes her sort of the class clown or the life of the party, so to speak. For females, it often isn't until like puberty that the deficits or the challenges of autism really begin to rear their ugly heads, such as not progressing to so-called age-appropriate activities with our peers, and so we begin to stand out the way we look, our body language. If we have tics or soothing behaviors, you know, neurotypical kids would grow out of them, but autistic kids don't. So often at that point, the difference becomes apparent, and that's when it's not so much that we change, but people around us change. They treat us differently and maybe begin to bully us, ostracize us, etc.
Did you notice when you did get the confirmation of what you thought was there, that you were on the spectrum, did the perceptions change for the social group around you?
I don't have a social group around me. I don't have a social group. I have a daughter who I love very much, who's in college, and I have a partner who is only known me. Well, we were friends long ago, but he knows I'm on the spectrum. I never had friends. I haven't had friends in many, many years. I was very isolated. And that's why getting a diagnosis was such a relief. I'm not a bad person. I'm not, you know, like Frankenstein. You know, sometimes I just felt like this monster that was being chased by angry villagers with torches and pitchforks. You know, I'm just an Aspie, which means that I'm not interested in small talk. I'm interested in my special interests. I'm interested in truth. I'm interested in perfection. I'm interested in, whatever my obsessions are at the moment, and don't really care for the trappings of socializing. They just don't interest me.
The difficult part of that, I guess, is that people that don't understand the condition would think that you're rude.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes I am rude. For us, it's honesty and bluntness. And I talk about that. I talk about learning scripts and learning manners. And, you know, manners are the oil that makes society run smoothly and things like that. But also, it is very helpful if the neurotypical world begins to understand that there are people on the spectrum who are blunt and who are honest, but they're not doing it to be mean. They're just doing it because it's the truth. Being misunderstood is a very painful part of being undiagnosed, but even diagnosed people are still misunderstood. You know, you can tell someone, oh, my kid has autism or my kid has Asperger's. People will still go, yeah, but make them behave in a way that we, you know, that they just don't see past that.
Was there points prior to you figuring out, okay, that you were part of the spectrum, that you were in situations where people quite bluntly would turn around and say, well, you were just being a bitch or something like that?
Oh, totally. Absolutely. My whole life I've had people throw sentences and proclamations at me that stuck in me like arrows, and I've never forgotten them. I remember one particular incident where a person, I used to live in England, that's why I speak funny, where a person looked at me and said, why are you always so awkward? Or, that wasn't nice. That wasn't a nice thing to say when I was just being truthful. Or, why do you have such a hard time with change? Why are you so inflexible? why are you so fill in the blank? You know, every trait of autism I've had people notice but never connect the dots that it was autism, because most people on the Asperger end of the spectrum, high IQ, gifts, so no one thinks autism.
When you received the diagnosis, you said that there was a lot of things that you've remembered, a lot of barbs, a lot of pain.
Mm.
When you were told from someone that was hopefully a professional medical person that, okay, yeah, you are part of this condition, did that release any of that pain, or did it just give you a reason to say, okay, well, at least I know now why I've done what I've done?
I'm a pretty positive person, so I really, to be honest with you, I've had a very, very difficult life. Pretty much anything that could go wrong for an undiagnosed female went wrong for me, from being arrested to being homeless, living in a homeless shelter, to suicide attempts, to being mismedicated and going in, you know, going cuckoo, to failed relationships, to you name it, it's all happened to me. So what I want, as soon as I got this proclamation, I just wanted to share information. And it's not just my personal experience. Like I said, I've interviewed hundreds, if not thousands, of people on the spectrum at this point. And I plumbed the depths of, you know, government reports and medical reports, and, you know, especially for my book, Asperger's on the Job, I did a lot of research. And I just wanted to help other people prevent this kind of tumultuous life experience that I've had. There are solutions, there are challenges, but there are ways to deal with those challenges in a very positive way. And that's all my books are about. It's like, first of all, being very proud that you are on the spectrum and celebrating the gifts of being on the spectrum, and then just navigating the challenges as deftly as possible. Some of them are significant, and some are just a matter of just getting a little bit of information.
You said then accepting the gifts. When people initially hear that you're on the spectrum, I guess they think of all the negatives first, but there are some quite brilliant parts to it as well, isn't there?
It's changing, and I like to think I've had something to do with it. I mean, me and Leanne Holiday-Willie and Dr. Shannon Nichols started a panel called Celebrate Female ASD, and, you know, we had an event called Celebrate Female ASD, and everyone was like, "What do you mean celebrate?" And it was just like, yeah, it's wonderful to be on the spectrum. We have incredible focus. We have a higher IQ than the general population. We have a higher fluid intelligence, which is sort of an interesting concept if you look it up and see what it means. Our focus, and we're mavericks. We march to our own drum. So people on the spectrum are the people that innovate. We're not necessarily good followers, although I can take direction very well. But we are also innovators. People like, I don't want to out anybody, but, you know, people like, it's thought Einstein and Newton, and it's been speculated that Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg, who invented Facebook, and many people like that who march to their own drum.
It is one of those things, though, that when you look at, I suppose, particularly the Einstein character and Zuckerberg, and that they're incredibly focused on what they're doing, and the average person's not. So you can understand, okay, well, it's not an insult to say that they're part of a spectrum. It's actually saying, well, look, they have an incredible gift to be able to focus themselves so strongly to put their life onto something, which, again, is one of the positives that you do get under the autism spectrum.
The diagnosis freed me up to go back to my initial obsessions, which were writing and music. Since the diagnosis, I've written 6 books, I've become a stand-up comic, and I'm a professional jazz singer just since the diagnosis.
What do you make your jokes about?
All kinds of things. I have characters. If you look me up on YouTube, I have a couple characters. One's called Mayhem. Yeah, it's just venting. It's getting to sort of act like a person I'm not. But I do make jokes about my family and about real experiences that happened to me, but I deliver it in a way that a very sort of neurotypical person.
Is it tricky for you because do people turn up to your gigs and expect you to make autism jokes and Aspie jokes?
Well, I don't do that many gigs because I find that the world of entertainment, I find it very ego-driven, and I don't really like things that are ego-driven, so I tend to do like charity benefits and stuff like that, or just do like videos and post them on YouTube. But I do find that people who know me through performance do not get that I'm on the spectrum because they see me in one element only. They don't realize I'm performing. Just recently, I was having a rehearsal at my house, and my trumpet player said, "I've never seen you act this way." And I'm like, "Hi, I'm Rudy Simone. I'm on the spectrum." And he's like, "Yeah, but I've never really seen it before." because he was used to seeing me out at clubs sort of with my normal hat on, which I can do for short periods of time. But as I get older and older, I'm less inclined to put on that normal hat. I find it quite dull. You just become tired of, as Leanne famously coined with her book, Pretending to Be Normal, you just get very tired of that. It's exhausting.
Is that a fear when that hat can't be put on anymore, that you know that you're going to almost fully isolate yourself?
No, because I have the validation now. I'm one of the lucky ones because I have written books and I am able to go on stage and monologue about it and be respected for it. What I worry about are the other kids that don't have that validation. So I teach parents and professionals and people on the spectrum about self-esteem, how important it is to focus on the positive traits and to really build that self-esteem and work on our obsessions, work with our obsessions and not against them, and find a way to get that train on track so that it doesn't just careen wildly through life, creating damage to itself and others, which is what I did.
You're talking in Australia about Asperger's in the workplace?
Talking about all my subjects.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been doing full days. I've been talking about employment issues. I've been talking about childhood. I've been explaining to people what it's like to be on the spectrum, what the obsessions are about, what they do for us, what mutism is like, selective mutism, what being nonverbal is like or preverbal, what being hyperlexic is like, I used to have subclinical seizures and pass out, and what it's like to be gifted and what it's like to be bullied. I've had bones broken. You know, I've had all sorts of horrible things happen to me. And what it's like to not be supported and how to support someone on the spectrum because it's so important. Hey.
Some awful injuries there. You're saying bones broken.
Oh, yeah.
That's from the social cues that you've just missed cues or you've given that.
When somebody is... The trouble with, you know... People on the spectrum are both innocent and smart, and that's a bad combination because it draws attention to us, and we often have awkward body language when we're younger, and maybe we don't dress right, we don't have the right hairdos, and because we're blunt, sometimes we say the wrong thing, upset the wrong person, and so the bully is always going to find us. And so I teach parents about teaching their kids self-esteem and getting them into some mind-body integration programs like Tai Chi, martial arts, yoga. It's very important to build that physical awareness, both for confidence and strength, because most of us are just in our heads when we're kids. We're just in our heads. We're just like heads with bodies dangling from them. We just are so, we're so incredibly in tune with whatever our gifts are about, whether it's music or art, you know, or reading, but so clueless when it comes to social stuff. So yeah, it makes us easy targets for the bullies.
That progresses from childhood to the workplace.
Oh yeah.
When you start to look for employment, how do you find now that you're a quite respected author and talker about this, how do you find, say, for employers to be able to accept that autism is something that they can bring into mm-hmm. their workplace
well,
and also utilise?
People on the spectrum are better workers. Just don't bully us. Just let us be eccentric. Let us do our own thing. We are the best workers because we focus. We're not going to be thumbing through fashion magazines under our desk. You give us a task and we will do it to the best of our ability. And we don't even like to break for lunch. You know, we forget to eat. We forget to go to the loo. You know, we are good workers. Focus, focus, focus. And we're good problem solvers. And we're logical. And we're conscientious. So best workers. I mean, there are companies... that only hire Aspies are popping up around the world. My latest book, I only had people with autism do the artwork for it because I knew that they would do a good job and they would get it. And of course, I paid them, but I knew that they would do it not just for the pay, but because they really wanted to do a good job. It's a marriage made in heaven. I give them the words and they give me the pictures. Yeah. My first book I illustrated mostly myself.
Is that another feather to the cap that you can
not
sing
really.
To do comedy?
I just did a very bare bones.
Drawings.
I mean, even Tolkien illustrated his first version of The Hobbit, if you get an early version of that, and a very basic, very precise drawings. So sometimes when you're first starting out, you have to wear all the hats. I mean, I'm still my own webmaster. I'm still my own tour manager, usually. I had somebody do this tour, thank God. But I wear a lot of hats.
when we look at, and luckily for yourself, you're self-employed, you're your own boss. The bosses that are trying to get their head around, okay, I've got somebody that is on the autism spectrum condition, what are the things that they need to be aware of so that both can integrate together?
They need to give clear instructions, and then they need to not micromanage us, because we will do it. We don't like to be scrutinized or micromanaged. We like to find our own way to do it. So just give us, tell us what you want and when you want it by, and then leave us to get on with it. Don't criticize silly, unnecessary things. You know, some jobs you need to be a team player, but a lot of jobs you don't. And there's far too much emphasis on conformity at the moment, far too much emphasis on being a team player. You know, if you're an accountant, why do you have to be a team player? You have to be friends with 0 through 9. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if you're a firefighter, you need to be a team player. So, I mean, some jobs call for it, and some jobs really, you know, if you work in engineering or something, you should be allowed to think. Just be left alone to think, because that's how ideas gestate. They gestate in silence. They don't gestate in conversations with other people.
After spending the day with people that you have talked to, and you're probably mentally exhausted, when you look back at the day that you've done, what is the one thing that you hope that they leave with, and they say, okay, well, now I understand this particular thing?
Oh, it's been great. I mean, people leave with tears in their eyes, but they're happy tears, because they feel optimistic that they or their child or their student can have a fulfilling life, a very fulfilling life. As long as they're not prevented.
If you hope, can narrow it down to just one thing?
Hope and pride. I'm not a big fan of pride, because I think it's, you know, like an ego thing, but I think in the case of Asperger's and autism, it's necessary to sort of kickstart the battery, just to get us to a decent level of self-esteem, which I think has been lacking. I don't like the word disability. I think it should be stricken from the English language. I don't consider autism a disability. It's a diffability. Different neurology, different, you know, neurological processing, in some cases superior, in some cases not. It's different.